We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of other things when it comes to what we put in our bodies. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. There's more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory. Flavor is feeling. Flavor is science. Flavor is art. Flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Corey Doucette, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Do you know what you want to be when you grow up? I still don't. I've worked in insurance, development, the circus, and IT. I have degrees that are not necessary for my job and run a side hustle in voiceover. The point is, most of us don't have one calling. We become what we need to be at that moment in time in our lives. Today, we're talking to senior flavorist Katie Pappas about her road to career success and to learn what a flavorist is and how she became one. Hey, Katie, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Corey. Thank you for having me.
So before we get into anything, I really want to just ask, are you doing what you love? Did you always want to be a flavorist?
So I can honestly say that I am one of the fortunate people that is doing exactly what I love to do. I don't really consider my job work. I didn't know about flavor chemistry until I was lucky enough to apply for a summer internship at McCormick in their flavor research laboratory, where I worked with a flavorist and the analytical sciences team. And I just instantly fell in love with this fascinating field. I was able to create and use my knowledge of organic chemistry and also be creative. So I just knew that's exactly where I wanted to be. So after I graduated, I applied for a QA position at the Flavor Manufacturing Center, where I worked as a quality lab technician for about a year. And then a position opened up at the Technical Innovation Center in the Flavor Lab. And the rest is history. I've been working in flavors for the past 18 years now.
Wow. That's way more than me. I've only been in IT for like 8. And, in IT years, that's like dog years kind of thing, I think. So that seems like a pretty straightforward path. I mean, when I woke up, as a 5-year-old, I literally knew how to say this word was, I wanted to be a paleontologist when I was little. And clearly that did not work out. I don't deal with dinosaurs these days, unless you're talking about old computers. But Katie, that's a great introduction of how you got to where you are. But let's talk about who you are, what you do at McCormick on a day to day. But let's more importantly talk about what a flavorist is. I mean, when I hear that term, I am thinking, that you are in a laboratory, which I assume is correct, and basically, mad science, just mixing liquids and powders together and, praying for some kind of reaction.
Well, that's a little right. So a flavorist is someone who creates flavors for a wide array of different foods and beverages, using both science and art to create the desired profile our customers are looking for. And a lot of it can be trial and error, but we do, work in a laboratory and we're blending different organic compounds, essential oils, citrus oils, to basically put Mother Nature's puzzle pieces back together.
That's a great turn of phrase, Mother Nature's puzzle pieces, because it's all out there. We just got to figure out, how to put it together the right way. When you start doing your work, a lot of trial and error, you must have an incredible amount of patience. I mean, I know if the problem isn't solved for me in like 2 seconds, I'm frustrated. Do you need to have a lot of patience to become a flavorist?
I would say yes, you do, but it can also be learned. To become a flavorist, it takes 7 years. And during those 7 years, you are going through a flavor apprenticeship with a senior flavorist. And that is where you compound flavors on a daily basis. So you're learning all of the different raw materials that you would utilize during flavor development. And also during that time frame, you learn solubility, what goes together, what doesn't, what different raw materials are used for certain flavor profiles and this and that. So it is a lot of trial and error, but during that 5-year apprenticeship, you really get an understanding and you're really building that flavor knowledge so that, the more experience that you gain, the easier it becomes.
Now, I got to imagine you had some kind of mentor in this. Like, if there's a 5-year apprenticeship, how do you go about finding a mentor? Is there a program that I joined to make this happen?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. So actually, McCormick just started the McCormick FONA Flavor in Training program, where there are several mentors. And I'm glad to say that I am one of the mentors in the program. And you apply and become a flavor mentee. And that's where, you know, you work with your mentee mentor throughout the 7-year apprenticeship. So I would say for the first 5 years, we're compounding, going over different raw materials, evaluations every day, both raw materials and finished flavors. We'll meet with our mentee and just go over. There's a syllabus from the Society of Flavor Chemists. So you need to know everything that's on that syllabus, because at the 5-year mark, you will have to go in front of the membership committee of the Society of Flavorists, and they will give you a written and oral examination along with an aroma evaluation. And so you have to pass all 3 of those parts of the exam. And if you do, then you become an apprentice member of the society. And then after that, for the next 2 years, you start developing your own flavors, like independently working on projects. So then the role of the mentor more becomes, I would say, a little less intense, more of a consultant. And then you go back and you're tested again. The testing is the same, a written and oral examination along with aroma assessment, only it might be a little bit more difficult. And then if you pass, you then become a certified flavorist.
In my head, when I've envisioned this program, I'm seeing just a bunch of like Harry Potter, like potions masters here, like just mixing and making. And that's absolutely incredible, especially when you think about all the things that you need to know and all the artistry you need to have. No wonder this program takes so long, the 5 years. Do you have any mentors or mentees that you led you along the way, or you're teaching right now, that you can give a shout out to, or, you know, keep going?
Yeah, so I'm actually mentoring Abby Albin. She started with McCormick about a year ago as my technician, and she applied to the program and was accepted. So now we are starting our flavorist in training path. And I'm really excited to be given this opportunity. You know, there's no degree that you can go out there to become a flavor chemist, right? A majority of us have degrees in some type of science, mine's in chemistry. So that is very helpful, you know, to have a base knowledge in organic chemistry, because we do use that quite a bit. But to become a flavorist, you really, you know, it's on the job learning, on the job training, and you learn from your mentors. You know, you get to pass down your knowledge and just, you know, really instill everything that you've learned from your past mentors on. So it's very much a collaborative, encouraging environment. And I can say it's just really fun. You know, I go to work and it doesn't feel like work. Every day is different. You're always learning something new. There's a lot of, sometimes, you know, there's troubleshooting or, you know, problem solving that you have to do. But I find that fun. And yeah, it's always fun. I mean, who gets to go to work and eat and drink and taste, you know, get to explore different foods out in the market or, you know, new beverages that have been created. So we get exposed to a lot of different flavor profiles that maybe I wouldn't necessarily, you know, see if I weren't in this field. It opens your eyes to a lot of different varieties and exposes you, I guess, to different culinary cuisines.
So Katie, when you were being mentored, is there a point in time when you knew that you were ready to fly, when you were ready to be on your own and keep moving? What was that moment for you?
So I would say it was getting around that 4 or 5 year mark, right, where you really have a great foundation of the raw materials. You know, when you are, you know, compounding that flavor for your flavorists, you're like, oh, you know, everything just kind of starts coming together. And, you know, when you're compounding and you smell the different raw materials, you know, without even looking at the name, you know what it is. And once that all just kind of starts coming together, you do, you know, you're kind of craving to kind of explore and dive into working on different projects and creating your own flavors. I will say I had two mentors on my flavorist career path. Unfortunately, neither of them are at McCormick any longer, but they both gave me a great foundation. One mentor worked more into like the sweet browns, and then another worked more in the savory world. And so that really gave me a great knowledge of both. I would say flavorists have, you know, a good general knowledge, but you tend to kind of, you know, find your niche, or, you know, every flavorist might have a specialty that they work in. And so that kind of, you know, opened me to many different flavor profiles, and I feel like it made me very well-rounded. One area that I was, I guess, wanted to dive into a little bit more after I became a flavorist. So when I first became a flavorist, I started working more in the savory world. I was supporting our food savory team, and I was working primarily in salty snacks, crackers, and cereals. And so that was a lot of fun, but I felt like I wanted to explore more of the beverage side. So an opening came up. Our beverage flavorist had retired. So then I moved to that spot on the beverage team. And that's where I got to really work and dive into fruit flavors. And I kind of found, I guess I would say, my niche or my specialty, which is tropical flavors. At first, I wouldn't say that that's what I like was looking to do, but it just so happened that every time a project would come around where it would be more for a tropical flavor, like pineapple or guava or passion fruit, I would be put on the project. And now it's just kind of become the profiles that I tend to work on. I work on a lot of different things, but those have kind of become a trademark.
So you are the tropical flavorist to talk to and meet. Do you have one that you know, if somebody comes up to you and you're like, oh, you got to try this, do you have one right now that you're, you know, really working on or really pushing, you know, for people to give it a shot? Like, I love to visit our lab just because they give me free food all the time. You wouldn't know this to look at me, but I am an avid eater of food, but that's not true. You would know that. But is there something that you push out there and just say, hey, you know, this is new and you got to try this? You know, what's your favorite thing for people to wrap their taste buds around? Or even just a personal favorite? It doesn't have to be new.
So I would say recently we have been exploring different beverages that contain tamarind just because it's, you know, it's up and coming and
flavor of the year.
It's yes. And so I don't know. It's unique and it's starting to, I don't know, really be popular. So whenever we see something that contains tamarind, we'll bring it in. We used to have something called Funky Fruit Friday. Say that three times fast. But we used to do that in the flavor lab to kind of expose ourselves to, you know, a different and unique, you know, fruit profiles. And that was a lot of fun. So if we do see something out in the market, we will bring it in as a team to, you know, constantly, you know, keep ourselves abreast of what is out there and just to kind of keep the creative juices flowing.
So then you and your team are, you know, have already tested the jackfruits and the dragon fruits and the durian, which actually brings up an interesting thought for me. Durian is notably a challenging fruit to sample due to its smell and texture and so on. Can you talk about some, you know, some challenges that you face when working with these flavors?
Sure. So I would say, especially with tropical fruit flavors, some challenges can be the sulfur. The sulfur components is what's characteristic of them. So, you know, you always want to make sure that you deliver on that characteristic type profile. But with that, sulfur can be a little unstable and changing. So, you know, you just have to be mindful that sometimes those profiles can have some change over time. Another thing is that sometimes they can be quite unpleasant. So sometimes when we're asked for a natural durian or a jackfruit, people ask for that, but they might not necessarily want that because it can be a little overpowering. So it's kind of up to the flavorist to kind of take that, but also maybe in a more like fanciful type way, make it a little bit more pleasant to the population. I would say another challenge sometimes for fruit flavors can be the base, like just acid balance and sugar. You want to make sure, you know, those different, you know, base can really impact how a flavor is delivered. So, you know, the acid level, the sugar level, all of those factor in to how your flavor performs. And also, you know, you can't take a flavor that was created for cereal and maybe put it into a beverage. You know, that's where the different applications, the balance of the flavors could be different. Very similar to a flavor that goes into a high alcohol spirit versus a hard seltzer, right? Because the bases are different, there might have to be some rebalancing to make that flavor shine.
Is there a go-to base to help with those more difficult flavors? A go-to, so for example, if you're trying to make something that's a little less pleasant into a flavor, is there something that you pair it with that makes it more palatable?
So we do see sometimes where we would get like flavor blends, right? So like strawberry passion fruit, because passion fruit can be sulfurous, but then with strawberry, that's common, that's known. And, you know, it's sweet and jammy. And for about lack of a better term, you know, strawberry, and it's commonly known. So when you pair it with passion fruit, it might not be as, I guess, when you pair those two different fruits together, it makes it a little bit more pleasant because you're pairing something that's known, maybe with something that people want to explore and expand their palate and knowledge of different flavors.
Yeah, we definitely talk a lot about on this podcast about people wanting to challenge themselves with safely or with something that they know. So it seems to me that pairing, you know, something as ununique, maybe not, that's not the right term, but something as well known as strawberry with something that's more challenging is a great place to start. I also think that people love those bragging rights. You know, people love to be like, hey, I drank this crazy, you know, concoction, or I ate this crazy thing, when really it was more of the well-known strawberry than it was the new crazy thing. We touched on this before, but I kind of want to jump back a little bit to, you know, day in the life. I don't love asking this question this way, but it's important for people to know when you start your day, you know, what you can expect to see. I know it's never truly going to be, you know, X, you know, ABC, you know, it never works that way in any job. But what for you is, you know, I start my day like this, I can expect to see anything from this to this. How does that work for you?
So our days are the same, but different, right? There's always something new. So sometimes, you know, you can plan out your day, but there might always be surprises. But a typical day for a flavorist includes developing flavor profiles to support our applications team, who are the project managers. So we will develop new flavors and work with our mentors and technicians on, you know, compounding and delivering those flavors to applications to taste in finished product. Another large portion of our day includes evaluating not only finished flavors and applications, but also evaluating finished flavors and raw materials to support our plant.
The way you put it sounds cut and dry, sounds pretty straightforward, but I know that there's probably so many more nuances and walk-ins at that point in time. Now, what happens when somebody comes to you with a challenge? Are you a challenge person? Do you like that? You know, hey, Katie, you're the only one that can solve this. Do you have that kind of feeling when somebody comes to you with a challenge?
I do. You know, we work very much as a team, but I am a problem solver. I love the challenges and, you know, being able to crack that code, right? So, you know, especially I'll get called down from the plant a lot with my quality background. I'm very familiar, you know, with how the plant runs, what needs to be done to, you know, produce quality flavors. And so if there's any troubleshooting that needs to be taken care of from a manufacturing perspective, I put my steel toes on and head on down there, you know, to make sure that everything is running well. But also just from a product development standpoint, there's always, you know, you always sometimes get those challenging flavor projects that, you know, it might seem impossible, but I never like to say no. So I always like to, you know, try everything that we possibly can. We also have great teams, our analytical sciences department, our materials processing technology team, and also our sensory department. I work very heavily with a lot of our scientists. And if I can't do it on my own, then I'll reach out to them and we will try to figure it out together. For instance, if a customer has an off note in their beverage or their base and they're trying to figure out, you know, how to mitigate that, we will bring in our analytical sciences team and they can analyze that product. We like to refer to them as the CSI lab for food because they basically, you know, can rip it apart. And then we take that data and we're able to digest it and figure out exactly what the issue is and then try to solve. Very similar to, let's say we're asked to maybe remove certain ingredients, like maybe if they're too expensive or the customer wants to consolidate their formula and maybe have a one flavor system use. Like if we replace a fruit juice or another ingredient with a flavor, we will take that juice down to analytical and they will analyze that. And then based on that, our team will take that data and create a flavor. We also have our innovations team and materials processing team. So again, let's say you're removing a fruit juice and we've built back the flavor, but now we might have to add in some sweetness or some mouthfeel or some body. We rely on those teams to help provide us some flavor tools to get us that sweetness or that mouthfeel that we're looking for.
So Katie, off of all that, I have two questions. One is kind of a silly question and the other is a serious question. Which would you like first?
I'll take silly.
Done. Okay. So when you come against these challenges and you finish it, you solve it, you nail it on the first shot, do you have a celebration dance? Because I totally do. It's usually a fist bump and sometimes there's even a stand-up portion that I do. Do you have something like that?
So I don't, but now I feel like I do. So I'm going to work on that.
I'm telling you, makes it so much more worth it. You mentioned your background in quality and solving these challenges. How do you use quality to solve these challenges? You know, is it basically just super important to have quality ingredients to start with? Or what is it about quality that can help you solve these issues?
So always very important to have quality raw materials and quality products. But I would say my foundation in quality gave me a different perspective, I guess, on how I approach. I'm also a very methodical person, so it just kind of helps me tackle from start to finish, almost like a checklist of, you know, what I have to do to get from point A to point B.
We are talking about challenges here, and we've talked about challenges to our customers and helping them solve that. Are there internal challenges that you face frequently, things that you need to overcome, you know, that make it difficult to maybe compile or make a flavor?
I would say sometimes if a customer has a flavor profile that they love, but then they want to make it organic or NGPV, that can sometimes pose a challenge. I would say primarily in the like natural extracts, for instance, a ginger that is non-organic may not taste the same as an organic ginger. So sometimes we do run into those challenges. Another challenge can be flashpoint restrictions. So if, you know, for storage purposes or TTB reasons, a customer would like to have a flavor that is above a certain flashpoint, that can be restrictive depending on the flavor profile, just because a lot of those fruit flavors, you know, they have those esters that are lower flashpoints. So that does drive down your flashpoint. You can sometimes get away with that with a higher usage level, but then we also just have to keep cost in mind. I would say too, when working on customer projects, always great to have the cost in use in the very beginning, because you can make the best great tasting flavor, but we also have to keep in mind cost restrictions, because you can make it taste great and then nobody can buy it. So, you know, every day we have to keep these checks and balances in our minds, regulatory, cost in use, flashpoint restrictions, all of that stuff.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those black truffle oil flavors going out to market. Those are just so out of my price range. That's great. And great advice there, you know, as far as things that you're looking out for and for our listeners. Let's move into the final part of our podcast. Let's talk about takeaways. What do you think is the most important for our listeners to take from this podcast and remember when either considering to be a flavorist or making a flavor, any of that?
So I would say that it's never boring. Every day is always different. And sometimes there are surprises along the way. A flavorist is like, I kind of consider us like chefs, you know, like chefs put together recipes, we put together formulas. So, you know, we're constantly trying different things and, you know, just keeping those creative juices flowing to always deliver the best tasting flavors that we can to our customers. And I would say, you know, we have a great flavor expertise ranging from all different types of applications, from food to beverage to health and nutrition. And it's also, I'd like to just say, again, I know I've said this before, but I don't really consider my job work. It's really fun. And it's also, it's really rewarding and great to see your flavors come to life. So, you know, even like when you're working on a project and you finally get to that end point and you're walking in the store or the liquor store and you see that project and you're like, oh, you know, in your head, you say, oh, I'm a little piece of that. I got to work on that. So it's really fun and rewarding. And I enjoy every day. I feel very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing.
And I'm so glad you said that, because that brings me into my surprise questions. My first surprise question is there a flavor on the shelf right now that you were a part of, even a smallest part, that you were just so proud of? Like, that's your baby.
I would say, as I said, I work on tropical flavors. So I have some passion fruit and pineapples out there that I am a little biased for.
I just picture you walking through the fruit aisle with like a pineapple in your arms, just cradling it back and forth, like, oh, like cute, you know. Second question, we talked about learning and, you know, mentors, mentees. And as we all know, part of learning is making mistakes. Can you remember a mistake that you made as a mentee? You know, I'm talking singed eyebrows, like standing there, like with, you know, flavors in your hand going, what did I do?
This was more in my quality days. I don't know if I should divulge this, but, you know, I learned the hard way about carrying gallon containers of solvent in like a secondary container because I slipped and fell and it all, you know, it went everywhere. So, you know, we do all have those moments where we're like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. But you learn and you never do it again. Yeah. Similar to now, I just thought of one. So sometimes, you know, when we're creating on the bench and we're putting together our flavors, we might be tasting different raw materials at different levels to see, you know, what level we want to deliver that particular ingredient. And sometimes, you know, stuff happens and you might overweigh. But if it's experimental, I'm like, okay, well, I'll make a note and I'll change my formula. And sometimes the best formulas come out of, you know, the oops that you didn't mean to make. So that has happened on occasion.
Happy accidents are always welcome. Absolutely. Except when it comes to my kids, they're always happy about their accidents. All right, Katie, that's it for Flavor University Podcast. I'm Corey Doucette, and I'd like to thank our special guest, Katie Pappas. Thanks for listening. And until next time, the flavor of McCormick is the flavor of life. So go out and taste it.